Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby, make it hot. Ride the cop till you hit the spot. Tell my baby, make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee. And here we are. Another wacky Wednesday here at Naked Soma. Unbelievable what goes on in the last 5 minutes before this show gets on the air, everybody. I'm here. This is Dr. Mark, and first of all, cackling away up there in the Ponte Rosa at me.
That's right.
My futile attempts to be on time.
Oh, you were.
Boy, well, what do I get for that? An hour of this.
You get a kick in the butt.
Well, geez, it's redundant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, as we speak, let me saunter over to the site, because I am so... I don't know about you, but this has been one of those eco weeks that I wish I could have just, like, got on a plane and got out of here.
That would have been very nice.
Really, I need to be, like, around total strangers. It would be much better for me. Look, I'm typing Blog Soma instead of Blog Talk Radio. So much on the Blog Soma. Mm-hmm. So, well, I've been poking around there, actually, on the Blog Talk site, and they've got, it seems like every day it mushrooms, like there's more.
Yeah.
More of these programs. Where do they come from?
I'll tell you, it's
used to be
unbelievable.
Yeah, it used to be 5 or 6 shows that were on it in our hour. There's about 30 now. You know, so, and then some of them are pretty, up our alley. So, you know, if you haven't taken a look at the Blog Talk, site in the last week or so, your hair might fall off your head looking at it now. You just looked at it a month ago. It is a crack. Here I am, dialing in. So, oh boy, as we wrap up an eco week, just in the nick of time, we are steadfastly moving into the autumn, and the initial conditions for tonight, we are going to be talking about inhibition and how we're affected by that on a behavioral level and how it can serve us in understanding our emotions a little more. There's been a lot of need for that down in Washington, D.C. the last couple of days with all the Rush Limbaugh bashing that's been going on. If you've been watching any of that, it's been kind of funny.
Yeah, I actually missed that.
Yeah, he said some stupid things like he always does. And
oh, well.
You are a blabbermouth!
There you go. Brother. So, you know, I mean, what are you going to do with Rush Limbaugh at the end of the day? I mean, it's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to find out, you know, this is... I'm still getting used to these things. Is it the settings that has the phone number on it?
Do you want it?
Go ahead. Why don't you read
okay.
it? I'll never find it.
The guest call-in number, 646-478-4847, and you really should call us. So we're sitting here waiting for you. Yes. You could call just to say hello.
There's a lot of things swirling around here in the Blog Talk.
Yeah.
I want to get to discuss with you guys. We do have a guest tonight. Lucy Marcella is going to be joining us soon and getting into some funky things. She's looks like a car-carrying woo over there, looking at the bio about her. And so we want to talk about this topic of inhibitions. When do you feel them? What do you do when you get them? And how do you deal with other people's inhibitions? Because it isn't just shyness. It isn't just being, you know, withdrawn. It's stopping yourself. And there's something to be said for that sometimes. Being an eco, I usually find out when someone else yells, "Hey, stop!" But it is part of your social identity, is knowing how to inhibit yourself and how to be able to overcome those things when it's time to facilitate yourself and make things easy. I have a difficult time with that. One difficult time making things easy, as you know. So this is one of those. Oh, I just got out of curiosity, just gonna see what this is.
He blows all right. He blows big time.
There you go. So,
what was that about inhibitions?
Yeah, I guess. So speaking of inhibitions, the Mets, last week, if you weren't listening, we were in active rooting mode for my Mets there. And, of course, they landed like a drunken sailor, flat on their nose on Sunday morning. And I don't know if you have it ready or if you uploaded it, but that 2 minutes of rooting for the Mets thing, did you find it?
Is that the one you told me to save?
Yeah.
I do have it somewhere, but...
Here you go. This is 2 minutes of rooting for the Mets on Saturday and Sunday. And if you want to experience the world of semantics in a nutshell, all four domains are represented here, and we can listen to it, and I'll point out what was there. And actually, you know, sports as an outlet is a great platform to study the domains. If you haven't been looking at that, go to somaspace.org and learn about what a domain is and which one of those is your primary one and all that stuff.
Okay.
We talk a lot about it here in shorthand, but
here it is.
There's a lot of stuff. Well, here it is. Okay.
You ready?
That, and then yeah, go ahead, hit it.
We're fans. We're Mets fans. And we're never going to give up. And we got to believe. That's what the Mets always know about. We got to believe. The fans,
there will be
we
power.
Always believe in the Mets. And we're here for them. So what's going to happen? They're going to win. Because I'm a Mets fan, and that's what I believe.
Let's hope John May will lead them to victory.
Sunday, when they get their asses kicked.
There it is.
All right. Well, you can't hear all of it, but the sounds of rooting for the Mets over the last weekend were there. You went from the peak of euphoria on Saturday to somewhere around 1:30 when you're down 7-0. You're sort of staring into space, wondering what the heck you just wasted 6 months rooting for these losers for. But the Phillies, the magical fighting Phillies, lost this afternoon to the Rockies and made Mets fans just a little bit happy. We'll be even happier tomorrow if the Yankees can lose. So now it's the root against. And that's really the, you know, in my 30-odd years of rooting for the Mets, I've spent more Octobers rooting against teams than rooting for my team. So it's no difficulty here going rooting against the Yankees. It's sort of, if you can't have your Mets in the playoffs, then the second best thing is watching the Yankees lose. But I did want to see if I could find this for you because there was a team that did make the playoffs that I still have an active hatred for, seeing as it is Eco Week and it's about being empathic and all that. Actually, I could probably snag it right off the old Mets blog right here. See. Here it is. This is the Atlanta Braves announcer on Sunday after learning the Mets were losing. He was doing a meaningless game down in Houston. And, you got to be kidding me. They pulled it? Well, there's something about YouTube. It's gotten to the point now where something's on YouTube for like a minute, and then it's gone. But anyway, he sang it. He sang the Meet the Met song with different lyrics, and see if I can find that for us quick.
And anybody out there who wants to join our web chat during the show, we do have that up and running. You go to the Blog Talk Radio site there and click on chat, and we're there.
Yep, and again, the reason why, this first part of the show, we kind of call initial conditions, just kind of looking around pop culture for examples of these things, and anytime you're dealing with polarity, we talk a lot about that during more onto weeks than anything else, you're dealing with a rhythm that's going in a vertical direction, and when you're dealing with positivity, of course, there's more attraction, negativity, there's more repulsion, but with the sports teams, it really, it's funny because I don't know if you caught that guy last week defending his player, and he's attacked the sports writer. He says, "I'm a man. I'm 40." All that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's always three opponents. This is something I didn't learn until I was pretty much about late 20s. Is you have your visible opponent, you have that's your opposition, right? And then you have the media and everyone around you that sort of, the fans, all the spectators that sort of surround the event. And then you have the division within, which is the division within a team. And anytime you see a team sort of falling apart, that's what really is the unseen opponent. And that's really what happens to a lot of teams, especially like the Mets, because the more they fell apart, the more they lost, the more the warts inside the team started to surface, and it got pretty ugly pretty quick. So, I don't see the Skip Carey song anywhere. Well, this is really sad. These rap bastards, I just wanted to play it. Let's see if I can, I'll do a little search over here, see if I can find it that way. But anyway, it just is a piling on effect, and I don't know if these guys saw the story about the backup punter. I think it was out in Texas. He murdered the starting punter. He got 7 years a couple days ago in court, for that. And the Isaiah Thomas trial just was settled a couple days ago down in the city, sexual harassment suit. Interesting stuff. When you're dealing with all these dynamics, like I said, you're dealing with a lot of polarity, a lot of emotions, and how do you navigate that? And we're talking about inhibition. How do you sort of hold back your emotions when you're being bombarded? There's a lot of frustration going on right now with this part of the baseball season. Not everybody gets the win. I mean, the other night, if you really want to talk about frustration, be a San Diego Padres fan, all he had to do was get one out on Saturday night against the Milwaukee Brewers, who were already eliminated, and they blew that game. Then they were winning on Sunday 6-4, and they lost that game 11-6. So then they go all the way out to Denver to play a playoff game on Monday night, and they're winning that game by 2 runs, 8-6 in the 13th inning. And here comes Trevor Hoffman, and he lets up 3 runs, but the last run that scored, the guy never touched home plate.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, so, yeah, it's humbling. That's like, and how do you hold back? How do you, there's no crying in baseball, so to speak. And it's a little scary. I mean, because when you see, sometimes when teams win, they burn half the town down. Every time the Pistons won the basketball championship in the 90s, they practically burned down half of Detroit. So it's like there's a lot of pent-up emotion that doesn't have healthy outlets, and a lot of times people just internalize it, and they'll over-inhibit themselves. And then even when they experience something that's happy and joyful, they can't express that. And, the psychologists, I know they love to label all that stuff. And what's that stuff, dysthymia and all that, those words?
Oh, being sad, yes, it has to have a clinical word now.
Yeah.
The low-level sadness. Shy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Low-level depression. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
You got them all. I can't stand it.
I can't either.
Let's see if I can. What's the number here again?
It's 646-478-4847.
I can't believe that thing is not on the site. This video is no longer available. Oh, wait. Let me see. I click on it. Anyway, it's kind of funny. So tonight, like I said, we're going to be getting into a little of that and how you deal with that. Because in our system of talking about it, and it's called Universal Semantics, there's six basic ways that you interact with your world and inhibition deals with a low coherent way of dealing with the way you act. So it's like you have to have a high coherent way that's proactive, and then you have a low coherent way that's more reactive. And the reactive mode is inhibition, and the proactive mode is more excitation or facilitation. So that's a waveform. Don't try to separate it. Most people try to separate it and say, inhibition bad, facilitation good. No, it's not good to always be facilitated. It's like only having a gas pedal in your car and no brake. It's being able to steer and drive and orient yourself so that you can get a rhythm between those two extremes and not get stuck on one side of the coin or the other all the time, where you're just not going to be able to navigate through your life that way, with one dimensionally. So what we want to teach you here this week is how to notice where you're being stopped or inhibited by yourself or by life, and say, okay, well, what's the message here? How do I turn in and get that? And by knowing which one of the four orientations that you take has information for you or a way to kind of provide you with some clarity, then you start saying, okay, all right, I know that my bias is to be, like in my case, is to be more eco, to be more oriented towards the vibrations in my surroundings. But maybe that's not where the clarity is coming from right now and whatever's stopping me or inhibiting me. Maybe I got to go look at my belief system, which is more ontosomatic, more referencing myself and my own past, my own experiences. Or maybe I got to go to my relationships and be more philosomatic and be more interested in what support I get from other people. Or maybe I got to be more exosomatic and look at a different system or a different way of articulating things and using a different language to express myself. So there's options there, and if you can get into that space or that gap between the event and your reaction to it, you start developing some flexibility in the way that you perform and the way that you can go through change in your life. And that's really what this show is supposed to be about. It's to give you an opportunity to talk about those things and kind of like figure out through example, and a lot of times we use the public eye. I know Brittany lost her kids, right?
Yes, she did.
Now, did they ever give it, is it because of the drug addiction?
She was told that she had to do a lot of different things, like parenting classes. I don't know exactly what, but there were a bunch of things that she needed to do to comply to keep her kids, and she did nothing. She probably just figured, as usual, she'd just skate by. She'd get away with it, and she did not.
Yeah, well, I mean, keeping her out of a car has been really the big thing the last couple of months.
Yep.
Seems like every time she gets in a car, she hits somebody. If it isn't her, it's her buddy, Lindsay Lohan. Is it like a rule in California that if you're a gajillionaire, you must drive your own car? Is that sort of the rule?
Yeah, it appears to be.
It just seems like it's almost like sometimes with the jocks, too. I mean, they're always driving their own cars, and they can't. They can't roll it. They're terrible at it, and yet they're always in them. Kind of funny. That doesn't add up to me. It's like I look for any excuse not to do something, and if I had a ton of money, the first thing I would not be doing would be driving.
Oh, yeah. I'd have a driver.
Oh, yeah. I'd have two drivers. Yeah. One to drive there, one to drive back. Drop me off.
There you go.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
So, I would love a cab. Like a ritzy cab. That's what I need. A little limo. I'm telling you, man. All right. I'll confess. I've been up for, 23 of the last 28 hours. I'm a little loopy. So,
you? Loopy? No.
I'm just saying. I've just kind of had it with computers and people. It eliminates, everything but pizza and sleep.
To start, press any key. Where's the any key?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Exactly. Oh, man. All right, we should be having our guest here in a minute. I don't know where she is, but, boy, the sooner the better. I guess our friend Philo is not dancing along with us tonight, is he?
Not yet.
He's not been here.
You never know. He'll probably pop in.
Dr. Jeb is tending to his six youngins. We have no idea. Now, let's see.
There she is. Is that you, Lucy?
Hello.
Hey, Lucy, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, thanks.
All right. All right, so joining us from somewhere undisclosed is, I got Lucy Marcella. She's a life coach, certified clinical hypnotist. Is it hypnotist or hypnotherapist?
Clinical hypnotist.
All right. and an NLP practitioner. She's trained with the infamous Anthony Robbins and something called Yes. What the heck is Yes?
Yes, I've done the famous firewalk.
Oh, and Yes, you've done the firewalk. Okay. I'm like youth athletically. I don't know what that is. All right. And she's done some other things in coaching and really been involved in NLP for quite a while here. So she's joining us to help us talk about life coaching and some other things. Is it a rule now in America if you're at a certain age and a certain point in your life, you must mandatorily hire a life coach? I just think that the last 5 years, it just seems like everybody's able to come out of the closet about that and admit they have one, almost like 20 years ago admitting you were in therapy. Now you, oh, I got a coach.
Well, I think it's a really good idea to have a mentor or a coach, but is it a mandatory thing? No, absolutely not.
I'm joking. I'm just saying that it just seems like now, we learn about this.
It's been
last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, well, it's getting more recognized now. People are really finding the benefits of it, and it's just becoming more of a thing that people enjoy doing because they realize how much it really helps them.
Now, make a distinction for us between a coach, a therapist, and a clinical hypnotist.
Okay. Well, a coach works on the present and where you want to go and also takes action with you to get to where you want to go, where a therapist might focus on the present but also works with emotional issues from the past. A hypnotherapist might work with you on things that related to do with suggestions or things that you're holding on to that might stop you from making any changes, whether it's to stop smoking, reduce your weight, let go of relationships, anything like that.
Okay.
So it all works really powerfully.
Yeah, it seems like, and then now you're all three, so it seems like there's a lot of overlap there. So in any given case or any given interaction with a client, you might have to put on one of those three hats depending on what that person needed, right?
I usually blend them together, I give them the opportunity to choose, too. Some people might not want to do any hypnosis. Some people might not want coaching that day or whatever. But I usually blend them together, and it works really, really well. And the clients are really thrilled with it because it works so quickly. So it's really amazing.
No, that's different than traditional, what Val would talk about in terms of talk therapy, where it just goes on and on.
Oh,
and
please.
On. Woody Allen.
Well, no, we're coaching. We're actually taking action. You leave the office with an action thing to do, and then I call you and follow up, and I hold you accountable.
So it's sort of a lighthearted parole officer.
There you go. There you go. Well, and they're 150% for you. Some people need people to vent to support them, to help them through a crisis. So, we put on many, many hats.
And the other thing that's different with coaching, it doesn't seem to be uniform in the way that the training isn't uniform, the backgrounds are not uniform, and the emphasis. Some is business coaching, some is more for personal.
Right.
So it seems like a pretty untamed horse at this point that people can get help from people that are not clinically trained. They're based on their own experiences. They're based on their own expertise in other fields. Val's gotten involved with some online therapy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I went to coach university. I've been trained. So I had 3 years of training in how to coach and how to strategize, how to listen, how to advise, how to not... how to really listen to the client and find out what they really need. There are people that may not have been trained. I don't know about those, but I think that you really should have the proper training when you're going to be working with people in that capacity. It's important that you do that.
Now, is that Coach University, is that the Thomas Leonard's old
yes,
outfit?
Yes, it is. It is.
If you haven't heard of him, he wrote a book called The Portable Coach. He passed away a while ago, but the guy was unbelievable.
Yeah, about a year or so ago. He was a terrific man,
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff early on when cyber coaching was this, backwater thing that people did. It used to be coaching was done with asynchronous emails, believe it or not. It was in the Stone Age. Okay. As the technology's evolved, the coaching profession has, now you walk around
off.
Sometimes... Yeah, it's ridiculous. I was at an office building a couple weeks ago, and I was in the elevator, going up in the elevator, and the guy was on his Bluetooth with his coach.
That's
and,
great.
You know,
I like to hear that.
I mean, it was just, and he's going to some meeting, and he's getting his, he's going through his talking points, and I just, you know, unbelievable. It's not Bob Newhart, you know, it's not the old tell us about those how you feel thing. Now, just because you and Val here, if you're dealing with someone that has an issue, we were talking a little bit about inhibition today as kind of a big ticket issue that people can plug into any one of these areas. As a therapist, and I'm talking to Val here, as a psychotherapist, it's more the person's problem that is the issue and how they feel about it, less so than sort of the structure of it, it seems. It's like there's something inside you that is making you inhibited, and I got to go dig in there and find out what it is. Where with the coach, it's more about, okay, this is the obstacle on the path, and now how we're going to circumvent it and move around it or through it or over it. So just Val first and then Lucy, if you're dealing with someone that's inhibited, say, socially with women or has a hard time with initiating romantic relationships, if you're a psychologist, where do you start? And if you're a coach, where do you start? So Val, go first.
Well, I'm probably going to go right for the esteem issues.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to look and see,
okay. You
know, if the person, where their confidence, where they're lacking, and if they have self-esteem issues, and then, of course, 50,000 stories will come out, then the session will be over and we'll get nowhere.
So ultimately, it's just a good way to spend an hour describing a problem.
You know, but that's what happens. You know, and once you get somebody to open up, they don't want to stop, and then you can't go, well, okay, I guess our time is over for this week. I hate it.
Well, there is a certain divergence that goes on in therapy that almost to get them to the breaking point. It's you are opening them up. They've been, you know, sort of keeping this to themselves, and now they finally find someone they can professionally disclose this to, and they do tend to just go, excuse me while I whip this out, and here comes your soul, you know.
That's right.
And then what happens is now that they've thrown up all over the place, there's a catharsis for them in the sense that they did share it with someone, but I don't know how there's any synthesis, because it seems like every session with a psychologist is session one.
Well, that's a problem.
There's a continuity there.
It is a problem.
It is a problem.
I think so.
Is that why most people in therapy, especially when you're dealing with therapy that might be couples therapy or therapy that's dealing with family, it just seems like it's too much of a simple procedure for what could be a very complex situation. And instead of giving someone, like Lucy's saying, more strategy, more left-brain practical stuff, it seems to indulge the weaknesses of the person, indulge the areas the person is protecting, to the point where it almost justifies the problem.
Yeah, it's a sticky situation, and I'm not saying that people don't benefit from traditional therapy. I'm just saying that there are faster ways.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you guys got issues with this, you've been through therapy and you've been through coaching and you've got an experience, I want to get both sides of the coin. You give us a call here at 646-478-4847. For me, though, in a somatic context, I don't want to hear anything come out of their mouth. Because inhibition is a reflex, and it's a stopping thing. So all you got to do is watch the way the person's moving, and the way the person's acting, as if, like, discuss something you like to do for 30 seconds, and I'll look at the way that they're gesturing and the way that they're moving their body and the way that they're open and fluid. Okay, now discuss something that you're not able to do very well, and you'll watch them become uncoordinated, more mechanical, more deliberate, and much less coherent of their body. And it's much more about getting them to tune into the vehicle that they're expressing themselves through rather than the road that they're on, for me, because the road has bumps. The road has, you know, all kinds of potholes out there. You don't know what's around the corner. But if you're not able to sort of reference the way you're traveling through, we always say travel light through the darkness here, then you're constantly going to be kind of, like I tell the clients sometimes, you know, you're driving with the parking brake on. You're driving inhibited. You're not giving yourself a chance to fully express, because there's no spontaneity, there's no sense of openness when you're dealing with that defensive physiology that's there because, as you say, an unresolved conflict with self-esteem issues or as Lucy would say, that they simply don't know how to get around the issue that they're confronting. They don't have a way to see themselves through, and interacting with a coach on either an intervention level or on a relationship level over a period of time might help them see the light on that. So just Lucy, just give me an idea, because you got a background in NLP. Mm-hmm. When the person is giving themselves sort of justification for whatever it is that's stopping them, and you know, I always say the most scary thing I see all the time is a healthy excuse, because if somebody has a healthy excuse, they don't change.
Mm-hmm.
When you see them going into that story, are you able to recognize where that story is weaving themselves into parts of their life that are still functional? Because it's kind of it's a little irony for me, doing the things I do, where the same narrative or the same orientation in another context in their life is working out great, but then all of a sudden it's sort of like you go out of the distance of that radio station and it gets a little noisy. Are you able to see where there's sort of a grayscale with a lot of these things, or is it just black and white for you as far as problem
and solution? There's a lot of gray as well, but to get to the confidence thing about that Val was talking about,
yeah,
I also do the confidence, but with, you know, make sure that we get into the confidence and self-esteem issues, but I don't let them, like we're in therapy, they let them talk. With the coaching, we kind of, I give them 2 or 3 minutes to whine, and then I'll say, okay, that's it, and then we'll go into, you know, okay, so now what are you going to do about it?
That's the one. That's it. That's what's lacking.
You don't get into the well with them because they'll drown you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you let them, you know, you're empathetic. You let them do their processing, whatever it is that they need to do, but not for a long period of time. And the other thing is, which is great with the hypnosis, is if they do have confidence issues, you know, you can hypnotize them and go into the root of the problem and kind of reframe that part of their life that gave those confidence issues. So I have clients leaving my office daily, happy, you know, feeling good about themselves and just, you know, ready to go on with their life. Well, when they came in, they might have wanted to end it.
Yeah, now how do you deal with the fact that most of them are out there compensating? It's you hardly ever get a free shot at someone's brain because they're either pickled on medication or pickled on the food they eat or pickled on their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Something is stressing out that brain. When you, hypnosis is, and I always try to make everything something that the person can do themselves. So, to me, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis.
Right. Oh, yeah, I teach them self-hypnosis, absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. I generally, if someone is totally medicated, I generally don't work with them. Then I refer them to a therapist or a doctor.
Yeah, they could come see me.
Yeah. Let them see Val.
And then I'll send them to Mark.
They want not to meet you, believe me. And
that's what a therapist should work with. You know, if someone is very depressed or, you know, I think they should see a therapist, work it out with them, or a doctor.
No, coaches, do they have a line or sort of a zone? It seems like they deal a lot with general sort of satellite photo stuff. When someone's dealing with, like, you know, a death in the family or, you know, something that's really, you know, catastrophic and traumatic, it seems like you move up the ladder to more of a counselor.
Right,
more
of a support, because you're there for them. You know, whatever they need to come, they need to cry, they need to yell, they need to vent, they need to be held, whatever it may be.
So coaching is much more on the facilitatory side of the coin in terms of, okay, I'm not problem-solving for you, I'm not intervening, I'm giving you an environment where you can actually recognize solutions where in your regular environment that you're in out there in the world, there's no space for that. So it's sort of creating a space for someone to get past the surface, I guess, where when you're dealing with... Yeah, well, that's a completely different environment because it's not going into the story behind the problem, where psychology seems to value more the story than the actual issue that's on the surface, because all the issue is just a double click to go into something that's been embedded in that person forever and sort of pin the tail on the syndrome or, you know, on the complex, whatever it is.
Right.
And then I just find the person leaves more labeled than anything else when it comes to psychology, and especially if they're coming into it with a mindset of medicating themselves through it or having someone else fix them. You know, I get a lot of that from the physical side in my work in chiropractic is just fix me, and I say, no, my job is to free, not fix. You're not broken.
Right.
See, there's a zone there that I don't know how to get around it with language, but I just feel like the coaching profession has sort of gotten a free pass on that because, especially now that things have gone online and things like that, is that the individual has no way to contextualize when they, when it would be appropriate to move from coach to counselor to therapist to clinician. It just seems to be how intense your problem is, how chronic your problem is, tells you where to go. I wouldn't know how, if I was a member of the general public, I wouldn't know where to start. So what would be the top three reasons someone should call you for coaching?
I would say if they're feeling overwhelmed, if their life is out of control, if they need time management, if they want to take their business to the next level, if they're ready to leave a relationship, if they're going through a transition in life, or any of those things.
Okay. I mean, it's what they call in living systems, it's more the cusp catastrophe. It's sort of before the crash or just after the crash, but during the crash you're going to need different help.
Finances, whatever it may be.
Okay. So it's much more, it sounds much more like you're coming from the left side of the cortex. They're more organizational and
right.
putting things back in the sequence and back and put the chain back on the bike.
Right.
Rather than delving into the,
taking care of themselves first, because when somebody's life is out of order, it means they're out of order. Their finances really aren't out of order. Their job really isn't out of order. They're out of order. So we start with fixing whatever and I don't want to use the word fix, but we start with them, having them build their personal foundation, having them start nurturing themselves, taking them better care of themselves. And once that starts to happen and they start getting rid of things that might be draining their energy and things they're tolerating, then their life starts to shape up. And then as a ripple effect, everything else starts to shape up.
I had a flashback to Injustice for All. You're out of order. Yeah, the old child's out of order. That kind of an opening statement. Wow. All right, we got a couple minutes left here with Lucy, so if anyone wants to get on the horn here and ask questions of our guest, it's 646-478-4847. And do you have a website or anything you want to give out today? Or?
I do. It's www.lucymarcella.com.
Okay, it's MARCELLA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Lucy with a Y. No, that fancy I stuff. Okay,
no.
Okay. So where do you see the future for coaching going? Do you see it getting more formal where a kid's going to go to, a couple of years and take some prerequisites and then graduate with a degree in coaching, or is it going to stay
they don't have to graduate with a degree in it, but I would hope that they do teach some of it in school because it's great life skills. So I think that every child should be able to learn something like that. It's almost like they don't teach you how to raise a child in school,
I wish they would.
Yeah, exactly. They're teaching the wrong things in school, I think.
Well, aren't they doing that now for marriage licenses and stuff? They're taking that pre-Cana thing and they're taking I know they're doing lip service to it, but there's definitely a movement towards what they call conscious parenting, where you start getting interested in the biology of it.
My point is, they're not, I'm hoping that they would teach more life skills in school.
Yeah, I think there's believe me, a lot to be said for that.
Now, instead of maybe math. I don't know if math is important.
Instead of math.
You know what I mean?
Replace math.
Hey, who needs math? As long as you can add up what's in your account.
That was my worst subject. We don't need math at all.
Mine too.
She's made a statement. And if elected, I will eliminate math.
I'd vote.
Eliminate math, put in coaching.
Oh, boy. All right, Lucy, well, thanks for joining us tonight and giving us your insights. And like I said, if anyone wants to get a hold of her, it's Lucy Marcella. .com and like I said, she's got a variety of services there to offer you guys, and I think that we need to get more of that type of experience out there for people because there's still a lot of stigma attached to getting help with mental health issues for some reason. You could be injured and go anywhere, and then people understand you. But when you're insulted and when you're beat up, it's either going to be the local bar or the diner. It's pretty much the first two stops of the train. And people like you should be available for that. So thanks for joining us tonight here on Naked Soma.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you, Val.
See ya. Bye. I actually went for regression hypnosis with Lucy years ago. It was a lot of fun.
Regression?
Yep.
What did you regress?
Like life regression. I went into past life stuff.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
This life.
Yeah, well, you know what? The past lives were kind of interesting.
I want to do the future life so I can know where this is leading to.
Don't even bother.
Maybe the next stop on the train is better. And that reminds me of a quote.
I don't want...
Do it again.
I don't want to talk to these cocksuckers, but you have to. In life, you have to do a lot of things you don't fucking want to do. Many times, that's what the fuck life is, one vile fucking task after another. But don't get aggravated. Then the enemy has you by the short hair.
Long live Al.
I've got to, you know, he needs to be, he's my favorite philosopher these days.
Yeah, he's the best.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, especially, like I said, when you're dealing with pent-up emotion, when you're dealing with things that you can, it's almost like, I had a scene this happen to me when I was, I was 16. My family took a little trip to Washington, D.C. with another family, and I didn't travel too well those days, and we went to an Italian restaurant, and, I ate a whole bunch of stuff like I wanted to do, and it didn't settle too well.
Mm.
And now I'm pinned into the back of this table, one of these white cloth kind of Italian restaurants.
Oh, no.
And I'm signaling, I've got to get up. I've got to get up. And nobody's letting me out, you know. And there was a scene. I don't know if I can tell you. And somebody's linguine was unedible after that. And I ran to the bathroom. There was a poor guy on the ball, and I had to yank him off the ball. And then I had to finish my situation while I was, his situation was still in the ball. And I pretty much skeeved everyone in the restaurant for miles around. And it was one of those experiences that you just thought, I don't know how I've ever eaten anything after that because it was so, everything was so gross.
God.
And where's this all leading to? Oh yeah. So it's like it's that same feeling of having to vent, having to let go, having to unhook yourself, and you're not in the proper environment to do that in. So it's like when you mentally need to throw up, when you spiritually need to yak, you know, where do you go? How do you do it? And I don't. And a lot of people, I'm telling you, there's a ton of people out there walking around with spiritual nausea.
I believe it.
They got spiritual vertigo.
Oh, God.
It's like, it's hard. If you take the population of people that are in pain, and then you take the population of people that are economically suffering, and then you take the population of people that are, just to say, mentally irregular, as Rocky Balboa would say, right? and then you take the population of people that don't sleep too well or eat too well, and they're all the same person, and then you tick them off. I mean, that's why I'm saying it's to me, it's much more of the spirit of living than the actual material event that gets people. Because the material event is uniform. Everybody stubs their toe. You know, everybody cuts themselves shaving. Everybody gets aggravated in traffic. And it's like, it's how you interpret that event and how you move through that and being able to, like I said, to be able to move from the gas to the brake and back out again and be able to shift gears. And you only can do that if you have sort of an internal compass that knows how to recenter you. And I just think people need to learn how to do that. And some of the things that Lucy was talking about made sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, like I said, we just go around pretty much, you know, puking all over each other in a spiritual sense and because we're upset. And then we get the dry heaves. No, you don't want that. Spiritual dry heaves.
I just keep getting all these crazy visuals, you know.
Okay, bend over.
Oh man.
646-478-4847. We're taking your calls up to 9 o'clock. And I guess our final friend is Betty by Boo. So we will not be joined by Country Joe and the Fish up there in New Hampshire this week, I guess, for a long trip.
Starting to miss him. It's been a while.
Well, he's out there. He's out there doing something. What he's doing, we don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, just looking back at this week, if you have the Rush Limbaugh thing, where he says something stupid about the soldiers, you got Isaiah Thomas with his cockamamie trial down there,
mm-hmm.
Britney Spears losing her kids. All these things are about regulating your emotions and being able to communicate. And most people, because there's not a lot of consistency with that, where the rules are not the same in every environment, if people don't know how to govern themselves. How can they govern society? It just seems like that's why there's a lot of defensiveness and rawness and almost overcompensation for that. And then you get, you know, like the situation with those folks down in was it Mississippi that were, you know, tied to the tree. I forget the name of the trial. And the one down here in New York, too. The guys got beat up. The authority figures lose it. And if you've ever been around an angry cop, it's a scary thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do have a gun. And at that point, they're not thinking like a cop. You know, and you see the conditions over there, and I can't even pronounce the name of the country, where they're fighting for freedom over there.
I don't know what that is either, yeah.
Yeah, it's something with an M.
Yep.
I can't even pronounce it. But that, I sound like an ignorant ass, but anyway, it's just, you see, when freedom is taken away from people in terms of being able to express themselves, the response is violent often, because if we don't feel free to express ourselves, then we perceive a threat, and until we can locate that threat, we're walking around inhibited. We're walking around less than ourselves, unable to completely open up, and it starts to compromise our capacity to govern ourselves. And that's what, to me, leads to a lot of crime, a lot of, you know, just avoidable stuff, because the boundary conditions are changing, and they're changing in a way that compresses everybody. And we're moving to a time of the year where the cue has already been given. Harvest Moon was last week, and it was a doozy.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's about the Mets blew the 5-0 lead before we got off the air. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Still stuck on my Mets. And if the cue is to go within, the cue is to be more in that state that she was talking about, where you're free and easy on the inside, because the inner world doesn't have any of the issues that the outer world has. It doesn't subscribe to it. It doesn't have any social contracts with it. It's pure. But most of us don't spend any time there. So when we try to go within, you get scared. I mean, I've had people just close their eyes and be fearful. You know, and it's like, wait a minute, you blink, don't you? And it's like, because you're taking away control. When you take away the visuals, you take away control. And people get very nervous when they're guided within and they don't feel like they can control what goes on in there. You know, a lot of things in psychology that I don't like, because they focus more on the outer world, but when they try to get into the inner world, they put things in instead of let things surface.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's an attempt to control the experience. And it shouldn't be something that people aren't used to as adults. I mean, you have an imagination as a kid, but as an adult, you don't.
Yeah, it's not great.
It dies off because you didn't cultivate it.
Yep. Unless your ego.
Unless your ego, and then you got a spare.
That's right.
For the most part, most of our imaginations are pretty unhealthy because we don't spend any time in it. And we're told not to do that anymore. We're told that's not practical, and you're a dreamer, and you're an idiot. And so you internalize the critics on the outside instead of really supporting, you know, the audience that you have on the inside, which happens to be the collective network, you know, all that stuff, you know, the
mm-hmm.
collective unconscious and all that stuff. So I don't know how we get people to transition back into that orientation other than to give them tools. So that's why on somerspace.org you have a couple of profiles up there, and you have the simples up there, and all these other things that are guided to get you back to the physical part of being able to express yourself emotionally. Because if you can do that, it's almost like you're getting back in the car, and then you can travel. Otherwise, you're sort of outside the vehicle, and whatever you do to mess with your headspace or, you know, do any kind of funny stuff to, you know, reframe events in there, it doesn't matter until you get it out of the showroom and you can actually, you know, walk out with it. Otherwise, like I said, that's why, to me, a lot of therapy is sort of short-lived, because it doesn't give the person any way to really own the things that happen in that room, other than to just say, I vented, I had a nice catharsis, I threw up, and now I'd like a 7-Up.
Yeah.
And some crackers, please.
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest signs to me that traditional talk therapy isn't always what it's cracked up to be is when people ask me, what do you do? And I tell them I'm a, you know, a psychologist. Ugh. They give me the ugh, you know. Well, you're one of them. And I'm like, what do you mean? You know, when I first got my degree, I was like, what the heck? And then, you know, over time I figured it out that it's not always the most effective way to deal with things, and that's why I went holistic, and I went in different directions, and I learned different things, and then when you introduced me to the somatics, forget it.
Yeah, then it gets a little different, yeah. Let's see.
Great stuff. There it is.
What's this one do?
Here we go.
You never know what I have up there.
Yeah, you got a lot of weird ones up there. Right?
Yes. Yes, actually, yes.
Don't talk to me about Christmas, will you? All that sticky, phony goodwill. I'd like to get a giant candy cane and beat the wings off a sugar plum fairy.
Lack of inhibition. All right, so it's 10 to 9. It's time to get the signal out there for the somascopes. I think I have it. See? Yeah, they give us this goofy capacity to make these noises. We're doing this for free. We're not going to not use these things.
Yeah, oh, we're definitely using them.
Right, and frankly, we don't care if you don't like it. 646-478-4847. All right, so we are on the diving board, looking down the barrel of another EXO week.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and we're also going to be getting into the early stages of the autumn accommodation, where it starts 21 to 25 days after the equinox. So we're going to be getting close to that. And that means that the last little oomph of summer is coming through, and it's going to be in the 80s here in the New York metropolitan area, if you happen to be on our side of the country. So the Indian summer stuff that's been sort of hanging around is making its last stand this week. And the exocycle starts the first pure autumn cycle that we have, in the middle of the month here, and it's going to bring up a lot of things that are related to that season. Remember, the season is eco, the week is exo. So you're dealing with the combination of static versus dynamic orientations to life, where the exo likes things stable, likes things structural, likes things to be sort of everlasting, and the eco, of course, likes the ephemeral, the temporary, the dynamic, and for the most part, the bombastic. So it's that inner struggle to be able to kind of stick and move, as a boxer would do. And this is going to be a combative week because you're dealing with, you're fighting off regret, and you're fighting off a lot of things to do with sadness, because we're moving out of the first lunar cycle, which deals with sadness in the past. Now we're dealing with sadness in the present, which is much more grief, much more heavy stuff. So this is like you start seeing the leaves fall. You start seeing things die off. Early stages of winter, hazy shade of winter comes up. So for the Anto, it's more about beliefs that no longer serve them are not going to work for them anymore. They're going to act off of them, and it's like that someone changed the key, sort of like what happened to me before with the YouTube thing. It's no longer available. So things are going to start to expire, and it's not a pleasant feeling when you don't expect it. And that's why, you know, for Philos, it's going to be a lot of relationship endings and sort of dead ends. And things are going to start to plateau because the cue, again, is to go inside. The cue, again, is to do more inner work than rely on the outer world for all your support. And the more you focus on outside events, the more you focus on your relationships on the outside world, the more this pattern is going to play out this week. So you're going to have to go through the learning curve like everybody else, but I'm just giving you the heads up on the somascope side of the coin here. That this is the time of the season to really start to pay attention to how much time you spend with and for and by yourself to orient yourself inside, so that when you do go out in the world, you're not looking to those interactions as a means to get your needs met. They're there to support the things you do on the inside, where if we were in the spring, it would be the opposite. And that's really where we're coming from this week across the domains. And as we go to EXO Week, remember, it's more about systems. It's more about having a capacity to work with the future and the present and the past all at once. Think about things in terms of when something happens. You say, okay, if it happens again, what am I going to do in the meantime so that I'm prepared for it? It's much more of being sort of hyper-rational, very logical, but also being very fluid and methodical, so that you're not doing things sort of out of a you know, being more out of like a compulsive way. You're doing things with more of a methodical way, more organized in the way. So that's what we got for the somascopes this week. I want to, you know, make sure you guys know what the heck it is I'm talking about. So if you go to the website and you can look at the coherence calendar under the simples category there, just click on simples and it gives you the whole calendar for the whole fall. And we're going to be getting into, especially when we get actually into this week, you're dealing with the fifth interface, which is we're talking about the fourth one today with inhibition. The fifth one deals with righteous indignation. So imagine if you're going from being inhibited and not being able to express yourself to then becoming righteously indignant. It's like the stuff you've been internalizing and not being able to vent. It's like me in that restaurant down in Washington, D.C. It's bubbling up. And, you know, you give everyone a fair warning and then run for the bathroom. All right. So, on that note, I just have one more of these things. I just got to get this. Is like kid in the candy store with this stuff.
The judges will accept that.
We'll toss it over to Val, and she'll wrap it up with the quote of the week.
That's right.
Pay attention, son. This is for your own good.
All right. Well, all right. I chose a quote by Oscar Wilde because he's eco. And the quote doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the show tonight, but maybe on some level it does. And here it is. Anybody can sympathize with the sufferings of a friend, but it requires a very fine nature to sympathize with a friend's success. Mm-hmm.
Very philo, sort of dark side of the philo there.
Yeah, absolutely.
From Oscar. Oscar.
Good old Oscar.
Yeah.
You're right.
We have 3 minutes to mess with these sounds if you want.
Yeah, I know. Oh, okay.
Pay attention, son. This is for your own good.
I really like that. That's a good one.
It's a good one. Let's see.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. I'm the boss. Need the info.
It doesn't matter how many times I hear it.
Well, yeah, that's good. It's because, like I said, when you deal with, like, and again, pay attention to this as you guys move around, like what movies you're tuning into and what you're using for your outlet, entertainment-wise, because everything about cinema, it goes back to, like, you know, to Greek tragedies and all that stuff. You're dealing with, you know, psychodrama. You're dealing with the mind playing out through the body. And a lot of that emotive stuff is cathartic. That's why people watch those jackass things and
mm-hmm.
you know all those crazy things on TV because it puts it out there so it's a collective experience rather than taking it personally and taking it alone. So you know when you're out there rooting against the evil empire this week, you know you can commiserate.
I gotta
get another Alan here before we go.
That's right.
Announcing your plans. It's a good way to hear God laugh.
That is so good. Oh, and by the way, listeners, I have a new blog out there, so if you want a little entertainment, it's professorval.blogspot.com, and it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Well, it's pretty much, you know, well, I'm just going to leave that. We'll make sure we put that as a link on the Naked Soma page if you guys can peruse that. All the links are down there in the lower right-hand corner. To all of our sites. So, all right. Well, thanks again for joining us. We're back next week, and we'll be talking exo stuff because it does fall on the 10th. We're going to get through Columbus Day in one piece, and on to the middle part of the fall, and all kinds of grief and sadness going around. But you know, sing a love song is all I can tell you. And as far as the Yankees,
of course, you know this means war.
Professor Val and the silent but deadly Dr. Jeb up there. I'm Dr. Mark.
Jeb.
Travel light through the darkness.
No, Mr. Boob, that's me. B-double-O-B, Boob.
I love that. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. Theme song.